fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing.
Okay, guys, boys and girls, moms and dads, it's Fish and Frank back here in the chair. We're actually live and in studio this week. There's been iCast, there's been all this stuff going on, and we actually have Fish and Frank, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in command and control. The band is back together again. ZZ Top, Move Over, new three pieces coming on.
you know they're 50 years as a band?
50 years.
They're doing like their 50th anniversary tour. Well,
they haven't shaved in 50 years,
yeah. Right?
Josh says, you want to go see Uriah Heep? And I'm thinking, no, I don't want to go see Uriah Heep. I remember Uriah Heep as, you know, the guys, you know, from when I was, you know, when I was young. And I don't want to see an 80-year-old guy up there playing, you know, heavy metal, you know. It just, you know, I like listening to it. I still listen to Uriah Heep, but I don't really think I want to see it.
Well, it was just a few years back in Punta Gorda at the block party. They had the guy from Herman's Hermits. God, he was an old rocker. He made me feel so old looking at him, you know. And but he still had, you know, the jacket on and you know, jumping around like he did when he was 18, 19 years old.
Who did Lightning Strikes? Lou, somebody or something like that. Did the high voice, kind of like Frankie Valli, Lightning Strikes. I went to a concert and saw him, Herman's Hermits, a whole bunch of the oldies, you know. And I got to say, that fella had a few years and a lot of miles on Lou Christie, wasn't it?
Lou Christie, yes.
Right. A lot of miles on that guy. But, man, he sure gave it hell. he really tried to hit those high notes.
Speaking of Lightning Strikes, we've had a lot of them here in the last couple of days. And, you know, I watch on this app.
Is that what that big fire is up the road?
It could be.
Did you know there's a big fire up the road?
Yeah, we get the blast here on the radio station whenever the news comes through from the police and EMS and stuff like that. But anyway, I track it on TBO where the strikes are. We've had a couple right in my neighborhood. In fact, I was working on the van one day, and I heard this sizzling noise, and then a big kaboom, not one drop of water. And the church got hit next to where I was. And I ran like a little schoolgirl back into the house.
Oh, yeah, I've been hit, knocked unconscious by lightning.
But I've seen a lot of strikes on the Myakka River. What does that do to the fish?
That's something we've never actually figured out, because tarpon is the number one thing when it comes to...
Oh, that was last night.
Robert's got some pictures of lightning bolts.
Crackling in the...
We had the same thing happen at the house the other day. I heard the sizzling, and I was sitting on the porch having a smoke and drinking some coffee, and I lifted my arm up, and the pain shot all the way through my left arm as the lightning bolt hit. It must have hit the canal. But tarpon, whenever there's a thunderstorm, they just haul out into the Gulf. I mean, they leave the harbor, and they'll go 3, 7, 10, 15 miles out in the Gulf. I mean, quick as they can get there. And sometime the next day after it calms down, they'll come back. But, boy, once the thunder and lightning, we don't know if it's the electricity in the air or, you know, hitting the water, or if it's the noise of the thunder. We don't have any idea.
Yeah, but I also don't know how deeply lightning penetrates into the water column.
So, I don't know what the depth is, but, I mean, I'm sure that there are absolutely fish that get shocked, killed, and stunned by it because, I mean, the Game and Fish all over the United States, when they're trying to do samples of fish in any body of water, they do a lot of that electric
they
shocking.
Shock them.
And pull them up. So I'm sure that a lot of those water-to-air strikes definitely do some damage to some fish.
I don't know. I really don't know, because this fish is just kind of suspended in the water. If I've been shocked because I was laying in water on a hillside repairing the front brake on a motorhome, and the lightning hit close enough where I got the thing going on underneath the motorhome. But I was holding a wrench on the metal frame of an RV. I don't know if I'd just been standing in it, if I would have felt it or not, without being extra grounded to the frame of a 30-foot Winnebago.
Well, if anybody out there has any knowledge of this, write us. It's, what, Fish and Frank? Or Frank
at fishandfranks.com,
and there's no G in that.
Yeah, Frank at fishandfranks.com. Let's see. We have news of the weird. Every few years, we get bonefish up here.
Right.
I mean, now, bonefish are traditionally fished for down in the Keys. I think they must be a lot like snook, where if it gets so cold, they just die off, or they just don't want any part of the cold water. But years like this, it was 3-4 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, but
probably
3 or 4 years ago, we had a bunch of bonefish being caught on the beaches like Middle Beach, Gasparilla, Little Gasparilla Pass, you know, all
Johnson Shoals.
Johnson Shoals, all over. You know, people are casting out, they're catching, and if you don't look close, you might mistake it for a whiting, because they both have kind of a sucker-type mouth.
Yeah.
But the bonefish has more of an arced head. It doesn't have the barbel on it of the whiting. The whiting has that single whisker barbel thing hanging off its jaw, and the bonefish doesn't. But it does have somewhat of a sucker-type mouth.
Correct. You know, and then the scalation is a little bit different, but definitely at a glance, especially when you're not expecting it, because, I mean, it's not...
not thinking about it, why would you... You would just think, okay, I caught a whiting. It's got kind of a round, gumby lips on it, and you're just thinking, okay, I caught a little, you know, a little whiting and toss it back in the water. It's the bigger scales, because whiting don't have a visible scale pattern.
Right.
Bonefish, you can actually see the scales on the fish.
Yeah.
So between the scale pattern, no barbel, kind of a more torpedo-shaped head, more like a modern van where it's kind of sloped down, you know? Where whiting, it just doesn't have the same look. But if you weren't, no reason to be thinking about it. Oh, I caught a little fish, let it go. But right now, it's a real possibility. The problem is most of them aren't that big. They're around 12 to maybe 15 inches.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a pretty good size one. You know, 12 inches seems to be about the average size, but we even have guys that catch them even, you know, 6-8 inches long, you know, and they're fishing like they're fishing for whiting. I mean, they're just using a bottom Carolina rig with a shrimp on it. Some instances, guys are using the pompano jigs, looking for pompano and whiting, throwing the banana jigs and catching a couple of them. So it's kind of a neat incidental catch to keep an eye out for.
Just something. I mean, if you catch a 30-inch bonefish, you'll remember it. It's quick, it's fast. I've been lucky enough to be able to do it a few times. But when you're catching these smaller fish, take an extra second to kind of look at it. And if something seems a little odd or different about it, take a picture of it and send it to Frank at fishandfranks.com, and we'll let you know what you caught. Because a lot of these little fish, that I think the bonefish are much more plentiful out there than we would suspect, just because most people don't know what they're catching.
Right, absolutely. I could see that. You know, and it seems like it's this time of year when the water is very, very warm. The rainy season's really kind of pretty much in full swing, but hasn't really turned the beaches tannic yet.
Well, we haven't had that much rain, because people misconstrue raining in Port Charlotte for a lot of rain. It really doesn't affect much of anything. If it rains in Englewood or Venice or Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, whatever, you're not getting that. Now, Northport's a little different, because Northport is far enough inland where the water collects and comes down the Myakka River.
Right.
But it's still not really up far enough for enough water collection to really change anything. When we're talking about rainfall, we're talking about on the Peace River from Arcadia up to Orlando, from Northport up to the headwaters of the Myakka up there at Myakka State Park.
Right.
You got about 80 miles of river. Now, the further up the water is, the more you're getting coming down. you know, because the closer it is to the mouth of the river, the less effect it has. It's hitting the Gulf. You get a lot of, you know, the water there in the Gulf. It's not doing the same thing as water flowing down a river.
Well, and water flowing down a river, all that water is coming from all the little tributaries, feeder creeks, off the flat land that we have here, and just slowly seeps off from fields and into that river.
What I'm trying to portray in this, RJ?
No.
Okay. What it is, like Robert says, the bigger the area, the more tributaries, little tiny ditches turn into creeks, turn into tributaries, and you get more of that mass of water.
Yeah, the water managers call that sheet flow.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the more area you have, the greater the sheet flow, then the greater the amount of water that comes down the rivers or the drainage ditches and things like that.
So, and that's where it has more of a profound impact on the actual harbor, the intercoastal, and the nearshore, you know, all the beaches and even nearshore reefs, because if it just dumps right along the intercoastal, that's all open water. It's spread out, so it dilutes quickly and doesn't really show minimal signs of anything versus...
Well, it's like raining in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not changing the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just water that was taken out of the Gulf and put right back into the Gulf.
Yep.
It's the same water. It evaporates up and turns around and comes right back down. Didn't change a thing. But when you had a whole bunch of that water flowing down rivers, because Charlotte Harbor has three major rivers, the Caloosahatchee, the Peace River, and the Myakka River, all come into Charlotte Harbor. Myakka and Peace being at the top, Caloosahatchee at the bottom, but they're all three fed into Charlotte Harbor. It's like people get mistaken and think that Caloosahatchee has any effect on Port Charlotte Punta Gorda. It's completely false. The Caloosahatchee doesn't add or subtract to our red tide or our salinity or anything. It's way down at the other end of the harbor. It's too far away. You know, it's like the Caloosahatchee affecting something in Venice. It's a ridiculous concept. It doesn't work. The water flows all the wrong way. What's the most plentiful fish in the harbor right now?
Oh, geez. Honestly, it'd either be the sharks or the black drum. I mean, take your pick. I mean, in the harbor as a whole, I'm going to go with sharks.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of the little sharks around, the Atlantic sharpnose, the black-nose sharks, the black tips, and then, of course, there's quite a few of the juvenile bull sharks and even some of the slightly larger bull sharks, like 4 to 5 foot, even a few six-footers around.
But now, do we have less bigger sharks here now than we did a month and a half ago?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, is there ever a point in Charlotte Harbor where there are no sharks?
Never.
There's always sharks in Charlotte Harbor.
Always. You know, targetable numbers, though, yes, there's times of year where they're a lot more abundant, a lot more practical to target than others.
I would say by August, September, October, I would say November is probably the month where we have the least amount of sharks in the harbor.
I'm going to probably beg to differ that. I'm going to probably go with more like January.
January?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, November can still be warm.
Yeah, it can still be warm. And if we've had a drought, it can all change a little bit. But by January, the water's cold, and a lot of your larger species of sharks have kind of gone offshore. But your bonnetheads show up in much, much greater numbers.
Now, there's no bonnets right now.
Very few. Very few.
I wonder where they go, because they like that cooler water. You think they go out in the Gulf, or you think they just head south or north, or...
I don't know. I mean, last week I had a few reports of them out in the holes. A couple of guys were catching them while drifting for tarpon, actually eating their thread fins, which is always unusual because our bonnetheads in our area aren't really big fish eaters.
Here's a Frankism hypothesis theory that during the winter months, these bonnet sharks are all over the flats.
Mm-hmm.
They like that cooler water temperature, and we know they eat shrimp.
Shrimp and crabs, yeah.
They like crustaceans, you know. Mm-hmm. So if we put together the migration pattern of the shrimp, we're in the peewee shrimp season. We're still getting some decent shrimp at the bait shop, but they're coming from way out of the area. But anything local, the shrimp are very tiny, and there's not a lot of them. Peewee shrimp are the most expensive of all to get, because they're very small. There's not a large numbers of them anywhere. So we know we're in peewee season, the smallest, least amount of shrimp we have during the year.
Right.
And the water's much hotter. Mm-hmm. So it's reasonable to think that maybe the bonnet sharks aren't leaving the area, but they are going out to the middle of the harbor, hanging out in that deeper, cooler water, the 8, 14, 18, 20 foot of water. And there, we know there's not a lot of shrimp around right now for their favorite food. But let's face it, I really don't like certain foods. But, hey, if that's all there is.
Right.
All there is.
No, that makes sense because that's where all of your primary bait fish are congregated, is out there in those center holes. Because, like you said, the depth of the water is a little bit cooler, a little bit higher salinity down deeper. I mean, I'll roll with that. And if, not sure what time of year it was, but I thought it was like June when my mother came down with my nephew.
Yeah, somewhere.
And we ended up going out in the center of the harbor and ended up picking up quite a few bonnet heads.
Mm-hmm.
And we caught a lot of those on sardines because we were actually trying to catch him his first black tip, and it turned into more of a bonnet head trip than a black tip trip.
What do you think, RJ? Think this could be right?
No, I think you're spot on that. As the water gets warmer, it's harder for fish to tolerate it. There's less oxygen, and they go to deeper, cooler places. And I can see where the bonnets are going to go to where the food is.
But because we know there's very little shrimp, and if you're got to eat. So even though it's not their preferred food, it is food.
Right.
So these bonnets can go out to the middle of the harbor, hang out in cooler water all summer. And they're going to have to eat fish just because there's nothing else available.
Right.
And so by the time the water starts cooling off, we got a lot more shrimp, more of the eggs have hatched. They're out there working the flats. So they can go back to what they like doing the best. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I might actually try to eat a bonnet shark, summertime one, from the middle of the harbor, and just to see if it affects the flavor. Because, like, my dad loves bonnet sharks. He loves eating trout. And they're two fish I don't like the flavor of. I like black-tip sharks. That's one of my favorites. And I like redfish, snook, sand bream is another one I really enjoy.
You taught me that one.
I don't like
a really good one.
That shrimp flavor of the bonnet sharks. And trout has a little side flavor to it that I'm not crazy about. Now, my dad would eat them every day of the week. It's a flavor issue here, boys and girls. It's not, and it has nothing to do with whether you will like them or not like them. Many people I know love the taste of bonnet sharks. I'm not one of them. I think I've handled, I forget how many millions of shrimp in my life, and I think that makes me a bit iffy on the taste of shrimp. Walk into the bait shop sometime when the power's out and there's 7,000 dead, rotting shrimp in the tanks. That will cure you of, oh, I'm going to go out and eat shrimp tonight.
Right.
It really does. I mean, literally, I don't even know how many pounds that would be, but let's say 7 times 15 pounds or something. It's a lot. And you're bagging it up. Throwing them away, you know, it'll destroy your love of shrimp.
It's definitely the last thing on the menu that I'd order.
I literally might try a bonnet in the middle of the summer to see if they're on a fish diet, they wouldn't have some of that shrimp taste. Now, if you like eating shrimp, that's the bonnet shark's main diet. It does affect the flavor of the meat. And if you're a big shrimp lover, if you love lobster and shrimp, you're going to really like bonnet sharks.
Yeah.
And me, just because of my background in the, you know, selling shrimp all these years, I'm not that there. So, but moving on, so maybe they don't leave, maybe they just move into a different spot. Now, we still haven't figured out what happened to the redfish. We are expecting flooded with redfish here in the next month, right?
Usually, yes.
Usually sometime in August, early September. The redfish come in, and this has happened every year for the last 4 or 5 years. The captains four that are, you know, getting people to pay them money to do nothing, and the save the this that are taking money. You know, everybody always wants money, but nobody actually, you know, Where's the guy out there walking around the water taking samples and finding out what's going on? I would love for if you're one of these so-called environmental groups, I would like to see your test samples of the Peace River, the Myakka River, the Caloosahatchee River. I would like to see your water test samples. I'd like to see them from the east side of the harbor, the west side of the harbor, so we know what chemicals are there, what not. I would like to know where your timeline is. So if a phosphate mine moves in, are you going to have back samples? Because just going there and saying, oh, look, this was there, you can't prove it wasn't there a month before that or a year before that. You have to have a continuous timeline testing.
Correct.
Not just your opinion. And not one of these so-called environmental groups or the for the this or the clean of that or the save of this or that, not one of them is doing it. They're a bunch of waste of money. You know, I want, give me some scientific data. Or heck, give me the money you're sending all these people. I'll use it to do nothing but test. I'll put 100% of it back into testing so we know what we got. Getting into tarpon. We talked about stuff along the beaches. What's going on with tarpon on the beach?
They've just started moving out there in better numbers in the last couple of days, and I think part of that has to do with the full moon. You know, all of last week was pretty sporty because of all the bad weather that we had, so nobody was really fishing it. But,
oh, and opinions expressed in this show are only the opinions of one of the idiot hosts. It has nothing to do with the opinion of the radio station or the other host on here. Just one idiot in the show. They're his opinions.
the fish started to move into the pass a little bit, and then they also have moved out along the beaches. The fish out on the beaches are still scattered, but I think the numbers are going to build since the full moon was, I believe, last night. And I think you're going to see quite a few more fish move out there along the beach with the amount of bait fish that's out there and the life that's out there right now. I think the numbers are going to grow a little bit with those.
Yeah, we're hearing about huge stories of thread fins hugging in the middle of the harbor, out along the beaches. Sabikis are selling like crazy. We're about sold out of sabiki rods. Tarpon tend to key in on the thread fins and these bait fish right after a spawn.
Right.
We don't know why. Before the spawn, they do eat them, but it's nothing like after the spawn.
Yeah.
Once they're done spawning, or the majority of the spawning's done, they really key in on the fish.
Yeah, they got to build up those fat reserves. Well, not fat reserves, but they got to build the oils back up into their body, basically, because they're burning up so much energy.
Well, that's why Waffle House open 24/7. The bar closes at 2. You know, by 4 o'clock in the morning, Waffle House is full.
Yeah, right.
You know. So,
you know, but those animals this time of year, it's so warm.
RJ just
out there.
Keeps looking at me going, this is my radio station. Could you please keep it down? Okay.
Yeah, the water is so warm that the fish are burning up a lot of energy very quickly. And that bait fish is a fairly high energy, easy to digest food.
Now,
soft tissue, soft bones, the
whole
nine yards.
You're just using a hook, some 60-pound or 50-pound fluorocarbon leader, and your line. You're not using anything else on this rig.
Just 60-pound, but I won't go down to 50 personally.
Okay, so you got your line, which is either 50 to 65-pound test braid. And for beach fishing, I'm going to say 50. A little bit lighter, give you a little more distance.
Yes. For the cast, absolutely.
So some 60-pound leader, a 6-aught hook, 7-aught hook?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little more partial to the VMC and the owner in the 6-aught or 7-aught offset circle hook or J hook, either one. It's personal preference.
Speaking of VMC, I ended up going to ICAST, which is the International Convention of American Tackle or something like that. It's basically the largest fishing tackle trade show in the world. And because the U.S. is the largest buyer of fishing tackle. But I went there, and this was the first year I didn't take anybody with me. Yeah. I actually went somewhere on my own.
Well, you were all wanting to go with you, and you just blew out of town on us.
Well, I wasn't going to go. I had made my mind up. I'm not going. And I woke up that morning, and I didn't even leave till like 8 o'clock. I was sitting there going, all right. And then I got a call from VMC. You're going to be here. We got to do those hooks. So I literally went up just to work with VMC. They don't have a hook for... They've got some decent grouper hooks, but a bigger space between the shank and where the point bends in. So you can actually get a bigger piece of bait on there. Something a little better for shark fishing, American red snapper, grouper, but a lot better for the shark fishing and somewhat better for the grouper and snapper, although I like their hooks already for that. But we did develop a new hook for them. It's going to come out in massive sizes. It's a really cool hook. One of the problems with the big hooks, like the 20-22-aught, is a lot of them have to be handmade. Now, VMC only has one machine that can make one hook at a time on this heavier gauge wire that's going to be heavy enough to do this. So while it's not quite handmade, it is one at a time.
That's not producing hundreds of them a minute.
No, you're not getting hundreds a minute. It's very slow because it's the wire is really heavy, and just bending that wire around, getting it all done. So, but anyway, VMC is coming out with a new run of hooks that I was there to help design. And then we all went back into the Rapala booth, and it gets a little fuzzy after that. There was some kind of rum and cups, and I'm not exactly sure, but I remember thinking, okay, it's 1 o'clock, and if I'm going to be sober enough to drive by 5, I got to stop now. But we started it. I think we spent a half an hour designing hooks. It turned out to be really simple. Working with Ciro, the head of VMC, was actually a dream. I've worked with companies before, as Robert has, and it is so difficult to work with some companies because they won't expand their ideas and think about what they have and what's new and not just want to redo all their stuff. You know what I mean? Well, we got this or that. Or, you know, why are we doing this? Because it's better. It'll work. And they were very receptive.
Yeah.
So it was literally a dream. And I don't know if we were there 40 minutes till we figured out, you know, the size, the ratio, the gap, the dimensions. It was a dream to work with VMC. And then I went around and I visited some other booths, talked to Bill from Deadliest Catch, Wild Bill. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't. I'd love to meet him.
He would have met him, but he's still over there pouting about not being able to go.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So next year,
I'm leaning back in my chair and next rumbling.
Next year, we were going to hit it with an entourage. So we're all going up, and we'll be rested. I'll have an RV. I'm going to take everybody up. I'll do the hotels. So,
hey, we should be famous by then.
Yeah. The only thing is, we don't want to say that because if you're media, you got to pay $150 to get in.
Oh, geez.
Ticket price is $150 to get into ICAST.
As media?
As anything besides somebody like me who spends a ton of money on. If you're a manufacturer trying to get in, $750. If you get a booth, it's like $1,500. If you're not having a booth and they find out you belong to a tackle company, $750 to get in. $150 for, I think, there's a price for everybody. And I'm a big buyer, so I get no charge. They really want me to show up because every time I show up to ICAST, except this year, is $30,000 to $50,000. So when you're spending $50,000, they actually want you to attend. You
know? I would think so.
Yes.
I would think so.
So, Spanish mackerel, what's going on with them?
The Spanish mackerel have been scattered in the holes, but primarily in the lower...
Oh, I'm sorry. Keep the Spanish mackerel. Wild Bill, Deadliest Catch. We were talking about... Robert's talked to him a few times. I actually was sitting there, didn't have much to do, and kind of buzzed and went up to him, started talking. The man is a giant. He makes Godzilla look like a little bitty baby. I mean, I come up to almost his shoulder. And I'm pretty much an average-sized person. This guy's a giant. When you see him on TV, and he lost quite a bit of weight. He's a lot thinner than he was. But this man is, when you hear stories about when Wild Bill was young and people were so afraid of him and everything. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a monster of a man and probably the nicest person you'll ever talk to in your life. Literally just wonderful, wonderful person. Nice as he can be. So, anyway, just letting you know, that was Wild Bill from Deadliest Catch. But he's got to be pushing, what, 7 foot?
I think he's somewhere between 6'7 and 6'9 is what I would put him at.
To me, that's 7 feet.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he's a monster.
But, I mean, Frank and I are about the same height, and he definitely, it's shoulder height to him when we're standing next to him. So it's pretty cool, and it's intimidating, but he's so easygoing, soft-spoken, you know.
And the weird part about it is you're sitting there talking to him and never even dawned on me to get a picture. You know, he's talking about being on the ship and talking about fishing and, you know, you're just having a conversation with somebody. And then all of a sudden you walk away and go, wait a minute, that was Wild Bill from Deadliest Catch. I should have got a picture.
Yeah.
But he's just so laid back, it's not like foremost on your mind. So anyway, Spanish mackerel.
The Spanish mackerel are a little bit scattered in the holes in the Alligator Creek Reef, but the majority of them are from the Pirate Harbor hole going out through Boca Grande Pass. Boca Grande Pass has quite a few Spanish mackerel in it. And then out along the beaches, anywhere from half a mile to about 5 miles out, because like you were talking about with all that bait that's out there that the tarpon are chasing, so are the Spanish mackerel. And even though it's very warm, we actually have a fishable number of the Spanish still around. It's pretty impressive. The ones in the upper harbor seem to be very scattered and a little bit smaller. Just work your way south and you'll start to get better numbers and better quality fish.
Are we hearing anything specific that's working well on catching them? Any kind of lure, bait, anything?
No, most of the guys are just catching them on just a silver spoon, the gotchas or the Clark spoons, just kind of the norm, basically. Nothing really exceptional or different. You know, it's
all right,
pretty good.
How's the snook fishing at right now?
We've had a lot of people asking about how to fish for them out on the beaches right now because a lot of those fish moved out there because that June is their first spawn, July is their second spawn, August sometimes is a spawn for those late stragglers. So you got a lot of fish in the passes and out on the beaches. In the early mornings and the evenings, you're seeing groups of 5 to 20 fish swimming along the surf line out there.
Now, me, I'm going to go with storm twitch just because I know it works and it's simple because even if you just reel it, you're probably going to catch fish.
Correct.
But a MR-17 mirror lure, the old TT-11. The other thing I'd go with is that suspending Sebile. That kind of, I like that kind of gold one. For some reason or other, I think it's a good contrast first thing in the morning.
Right.
Where the other ones I'm using are white, silver, green. Whites, I use a lot of the whites out there and the silvers.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason or other, I like that kind of bronze, gold, Sebile, especially when it's just at daylight or just starting to get dark. I think it gives me a better presence.
Right. You're talking, it's the amber, isn't it?
Yeah, the amber color. That's the color. What I'm talking about. Now, I don't know if it's a good idea to get that one or not, but to me, I like it in the low-light conditions.
Right, and I could see that because that amber color just, there's something about amber in general that just works. I don't really have a good explanation for it, but like you're saying, in the early mornings or the evenings, basically when you're starting to lose color, that seems to be when that works extremely well, both in dark water and in clear water.
Because if I was going to fish the MR-17, I'm going to throw out there with an 18 or maybe a 21. Those are color patterns, silver, white, green. Or maybe even just the broken glass silver. And I'm going to be short twitching it. If you buy a mirror lure, keep in mind it's not like a storm twitch stick. It does not have a lip on it. It will not help you catch a fish. When you catch one with the mirror lure, it's because you worked it right. If you just reel it in, it is never going to catch a fish unless you got one that's starving to death and he goes, oh, something's moving. You might as well have hit a rock. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when you twitch those, they suspend in the water. If I'm out knee deep, as soon as I see it splash the water, I put my rod to 90-degree angle from where I'm at and start tapping the tip. And I only want that thing to move 6 inches at a time, 4 inches. So it's a real short, tight pull, jerk on the rod. A lot of times I just take my finger and kind of like I was tapping, I'm tapping on the table there. Just, you know, like you pretend you're playing drums and you're tapping your finger that way. Just to give it a little bit of movement. And then every once in a while, I'll give one of those big pulls that'll move that lure 2-3 feet just to kind of get a different action, a different, oh my God, this, you know, I want that. Look, it's getting away.
Cause a reaction strike.
Yeah, because twitch, 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 pause, twitch, pause, twitch, twitch, pause. You're staying in the same thing to get their attention. And you're going to get a lot more attention by only moving the lure a couple inches to 6 inches at a time. It allows them to key in on it, figure out where it is, give them time to think about do they want it. But then you make that longer pull that's a foot and a half, 2-3-4 foot pull. If the water's clear, they can still see it, but it's getting away.
Yeah, well, I can see that. You know, out there on the beach, for me personally, I'd probably be throwing, like, the banana jigs are a good one.
Now, do you do the banana jig with the teaser or without?
I usually do it without.
I mean, I throw it with the teaser. I don't like it without the teaser.
No particular reason. I just don't, you know.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I don't think it really makes a bigger difference or not, but I gotta have the teaser out when I throw it, or I just have zero confidence.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like that little red plastic thing on the back of a Johnson Sprite. Some guys swear by it, and some guys snap them off because they just don't want them on there. You know,
yeah, and they both catch fish. It works both ways.
Absolutely.
But I think for me, it's just the confidence factor. I'm really think I'm going to catch a fish when I have that teaser on there.
Yeah.
And for you, without the teaser, gives you more confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm right there with you at the Storm Twitch Stick. You know, I like that lure because, for me, it's a no-brainer lure. I just cast it and reel it. I just change my speed.
Oh, we had a...
It catches too many fish.
Oh, and no.
Early light, late light, middle of the day, at night. It doesn't matter. That lure just...
I have sitting in the Rapala booth, and some guy walks up, and he's a little bit older than me, and he sits down, we're talking. He says, yeah, next year we're going to put a Twitch stick up here on the wall just for you. And I'm like, and I start laughing. I said, yeah, he says, you know, what do you do with that Twitch stick? I said, I don't know. I said, my thing with the Twitch stick is I ordered 3,000 of them last November. And I said, and then we had to call back in the end of May and said, I need another 3,000. And I'm hearing this stuff from one of your guys that, I need to order enough for a year. And I said, you know, to me, I thought 3,000 would get me through a year. I didn't realize in, you know, like 6 months, I was going to need another 3,000 lures. I said, that's just never crossed my mind. But I really want to know who the Yakov Smirnoff is that is upset because now I've ordered 6,000 of these lures in less than a year. That I'm ordering every 3 months 3,000 lures. So this year, I will have bought 6,000 of these from your company, or this company, rather. I didn't know it was his company at the time. From this company, I said, I'm wondering who's got a problem with that. I want you to name one other person who's bought 6,000 of any one lure. Name a company, any company. Who's bought 6,000 of an individual lure this year? Outside of me, and I want to know who had a problem with that. That this was a pain. This is a problem. I found out the guy. I'm laughing about it. It's funny. You know, we're just having a good time. And they had already been filling me full of that rum type beverage they had in the back there.
Loosen the lips. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Pilar, something with a P. I don't know. It's some kind of low production rum, but really good. And because I hadn't eaten, they were giving me smoked sailfish, and I forget what all of those other fish they had there. But they had fish and crackers and all that.
It's just rubbing it in, Robert.
So I'm sitting there.
The wound's getting deeper, isn't it?
Buzzed, yeah, it is. And I'm talking to some guy laughing at him, and turns out he is the guy who runs the factory.
Okay.
He was the boss of bosses of bosses. And well, here I am giving him a hard time laughing. And
he was the head man without having the last name, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was the boss of all the bosses.
Yeah. All the rest of the guys. And then the one guy who actually I knew was the one who said, you know, that, come on, you should be ordering enough for a year, da-da-da, this is a pain in the butt. He was actually standing over there, and I was kind of doing it just ribbing him, and because he's an awesome, nice guy.
Yeah.
And then he just, because I guess of who I was sitting with, all of a sudden, he had something to do somewhere way far away from there.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, that was my first time ever going to... Oh, God, since you started working there, I've never been to a tackle show by myself.
Yeah, I mean, you took me to my first trade show second year me working there.
So 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been 20 years since I was at a trade show or tackle show by myself.
No, that's not entirely true. I mean, because Terry, you and her went to an ICAST.
Oh, the one in Vegas.
About 15 years ago or so.
The one in Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, technically, sort of true.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Where are we? Offshore, what's going on? Ton of fishing still offshore. Guys are lighting them up.
Yeah, and, it surprises
Before
me.
Before we get into which fish, I want to know number one baits.
Number one baits for offshore?
Yeah. You got any artificials and or what natural baits?
Artificial-wise, I mean, I'm going to stick with my same old go-to every time. It's just going to be a bucktail with a grub tail on the back of it or a fish bites on the back of it.
Seen that one. I want to get out and try the one from Sabille, Band of Anglers, Patrick Sabille, but that Band of Anglers,
bucktail is so
it looks
cool
like
looking.
A spaceship.
Yeah.
It's got like a wing all the way around it. It looks like a flying saucer with a bucktail on it.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. And what are the ribs on the bottom of that thing for?
Yeah,
I forgot
no
to
idea.
Ask him about
it's
that because
be
all the other guys were busy chatting him up, so I didn't get any info out of it.
I didn't. I was in saw Patrick for about 3 minutes, but I mean, I was kind of buzzed, and so I was in and out of the booth, go in and shake their hands. Yeah, no, it's nice to see you. Okay,
I mean,
goodbye.
Both you guys have each other on speed dial, so I mean, it's not like you don't chat like every now and then.
I did. If I hung around those booths more than a couple minutes, it would cost me thousands of dollars.
True.
So I was getting in, saying hello, and getting out before they got in my pocket.
That's true.
So I was hiding.
Yeah, so artificial-wise, I'd be using a bucktail with some type of grub tail on it, but I'd probably try the fish bite. I always take the fish bites with me as added bonus in case I either run out of bait or want to add to the bait.
Well, I like using the bloodworm scent.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, but the only thing is if you put a bucktail and you got squid or sardine or anything on it, it's got a J-hook, you're illegally fishing now.
Technically,
but
yes.
But you can put fish bites on and remain legal, or a gulp, curl tail. Gulp is legal as well.
Yeah.
But any kind of natural bait, you're actually illegal fishing.
Yeah.
And we all want to try and stay legal, mostly.
Well, and it's like I tell people all the time, you know, it's like I'm telling you this so that way you're legal because you're the one that's going to get the ticket, not me. So my best deal is to inform you the best way possible. It's not... Not that I necessarily have to agree with it, but I don't want to see somebody get in trouble because I misrepresented something.
All right.
Right.
So,
and if you don't get the ticket, that's $500 more you got to spend at the store.
Yeah.
Right. There you go.
All right. Three best baits. Cigar minnows, Spanish sardines, and squid?
Yes. You know, I'm going to go with four because I got to take shrimp. I got to take frozen shrimp with me.
Okay. So shrimp. So out of that, which one would you – you got four baits there, shrimp, squid, sardines, and cigar minnows. Which are the ones you have to have?
Shrimp and sardines.
Okay.
Shrimp and sardines are going to be my go-to because of
I'm
sardine.
I'm
going to
go squid and sardines because it's too late in the year for a big shrimp run.
Yeah, but I can use pieces of it. And there's so many different snapper out there right now that it's hard to pass up on some of the yellowtail that are showing up. There's still a lot of lane snapper. The mangrove snapper, they spawned on this big full moon. All your snappers did, really, all over the world, for the most part, spawn on the
Ooh,
full moon.
Party on the reef.
Party in the whole world's oceans right now. The August and or July and August full moon almost all of your snappers getting these big aggregates of individual species. So your mangroves will be in this big clump, and then your lane snapper will be over in this big clump, and then your yellowtail there or somewhere else, you know, and they'll get in these big giant groups. And there's times where you can get into hundreds and hundreds of these fish in one little area, and it'll be one side of the reef will have nothing but mangroves, and then 100 yards away will have nothing but lanes. And then there's always a couple of places where you've got the mixtures of them, where they've either already spawned and now they've kind of gone back and blended back in together. So the shrimp's going to be my second choice. Sardines will be my number one first choice, because with the sardine, I can free line one out the back. I can put a whole big one down there for the gag grouper that are being caught out there in about that 15 to 20 mile mark, starting to get a couple more in closer gag reports. And then I can also cut it up into smaller pieces for some of the other miscellaneous species. So I think sardine's probably one of the most versatile out of all
now,
of them.
Cigar minnows are just a version of sardine that hold together better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
sardines are very hard to keep on hook. You got to be pretty creative with your hook, how you put the hook in, sometimes going through the mouth and bringing it out through the back or the belly. Sardines are hard to keep on a hook. They catch a lot of fish because they're soft, oily, mushy, nasty, everything a fish loves. Cigar minnows are a much more solid version of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where ballyhoo would fall in between there.
I think it falls kindly right in between the two, because it's not as firm as a cigar minnow, but it's definitely more firm than a sardine.
So you could use the sardines, the ballyhoo, or the cigar minnows. But,
you know, the one thing I don't get, though, is when you go offshore fishing, it's not like you say, hey, I'm going offshore fishing right now. You don't just make up your mind right then and go. Usually you're planning it a couple days in advance anyway. The only thing that sets you back from the last minute is the weather. But it's not like you make that decision right on a whim. So these guys come in to buy their bait sometimes 2, 3, 5 days beforehand. Me personally, when I do that with sardines, when I know I'm going offshore, I like to brine them.
I don't know. I'd rather just buy the sardines or the ballyhoo. I don't like brining the bait. It's too much work.
It's in the bottom of a cooler with some ice and some rock salt over the top of it.
So you just open the box of sardines, scatter them out in the bottom of a cooler,
mm-hmm.
and then what do you do?
A thin layer of ice on the bottom, lay the sardines out, and they don't have to be pretty. I just throw them in there on the bottom so they're not piled on top of each other, but kind of piled. And then rock salt, like water softener rock salt, not the pelleted version, just rock salt. A thin layer over them. It doesn't have to be an inch thick, but, you know, just enough where it's a light covering over them. And then some more ice over the top of that. And then if you want to get really, really creative with it to keep them really vibrant looking as they are right now without making them dulled out a little bit more, because you're going to add water and all that stuff, it dulls them out sometimes, sprinkle some baking soda on top of that salt and then your ice. And the baking soda helps brighten up the colors of it, or at least retain the colors that are already there in that bait.
Because most places right now have the Indian import sardines. They're sardines, but from a different part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We still have the actual Spanish ones, which are bigger, brighter, shinier.
Just healthier, more robust overall.
Yeah,
and they are.
I bought 40 cases, you know.
Well, and they are a little bit more firm.
You should have seen Robert's face the day that showed up.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. And your face was even more impressive, because you're like, you really got all those in there?
Yeah. I thought I was going to have to go down and buy more freezers.
Yeah, I started.
We got 11.
I started to panic myself.
All right. Let's see. Black drum in the canals, big chunks of shrimp, 4-0, 6-0 hook, and I just keep loading the hook up till it's full for black drum, whether it's with chunks of blue crab or maybe 2, 3, 4 shrimp tails if I've got a 6-0 hook. I want a wad of shrimp on there, and I just as soon it was dead, I don't want a bunch of live shrimp on there, or I'll put like a big frozen shrimp on, dead shrimp, and a small live shrimp just to give it a little kicking, you know
just
what I mean?
Just a little bit of motion.
Yeah, so, but they're not going to live long in the canals right now. It's too hot, it's too fresh, but for black drum, either some crabs or wads of shrimp on there. never tried putting like a chunk of squid, a chunk of frozen shrimp, something like that on there. You think it'd
like
be
a shish kebab? Like a shish kebab.
Yeah, kind
give,
of.
Give them a sample of everything that they it's could like possibly
turducken.
Be hungry for, yeah?
Yeah, a turducken, you know, whatever the heck they have. Shish kebabs. So, but I mean, I've never tried that.
Neither have I.
Squid, you know, some shrimp, maybe a piece of sardine or mullet or something like
piece
that.
Piece of clam.
Piece of clam would be a good one to put on
piece
there.
Of clam
you know,
might
never
be an
thought
interesting.
About why don't we use we carry clams in stock why don't you use that on black drum
they eat oysters
that's they what I mean some, wouldn't the clams be an awesome
it just
bait?
Clicked it just literally just now
I never thought about it either yeah
that's so we're gonna have to try that
we gotta
I'm gonna put the girlfriend on that this weekend that's gonna
yep.
be her project
yeah
here's I'll, some clam what do you think of this try this
I'll supply the clams because that's an awesome idea I've never thought of it
yeah there why I'd be really curious on that one now the wheels are turning it's amazing the stuff you just pops out when you're just babbling about stuff
well that's the whole idea behind what we do we just kind of talk through it come up with ideas and you know try and share them with people right. I think that's pretty cool a lot of stuff going on in the area. We'll get more into it next week. I think we're down to like the last minute or so.
You're down to the last minute, right?
So, and I know we were talking about the storms in the beginning. So, you know, big thing is right now, fish early in the mornings. Pay attention to the storms later in the afternoons. Don't ever let those storms get between you and land.
Well, don't let the storms get between you and where you dock your boat. You know, when the storms start running in, start heading back. RJ, any last ideas?
I'd agree with that. It's afternoon thunderstorms. There's a lot of lightning coming down right now, so it's a time to be careful. Fish in the morning.
Yeah, go out, enjoy yourself first thing in the morning, be on the boat at dark 30, leaving the dock as soon as it's daylight out, idle out, and fire up once you can see good. Don't run the motor until you can't. You've got to be able to see, boys and girls. Really critical, okay? Robert, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Robert.
RJ, bye.
Bye-bye.
I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.